Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer günstig und natürlich mit dem Aldi-Tiefpreisversprechen. Zum Beispiel knackiges Gemüse, saftiges Obst, frische Backwaren. Kurz gesagt, mehr Frische für alle. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote zum Tiefpreis in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Ashley Stapp? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Ashley Nicole Stapp was born sometime around 1991 and lived in San Bernardino County, California. She worked at a Jamba Juice. When Ashley was 23, she injured her hip and was prescribed narcotics. She became dependent on the drugs and purchased them from people who sold them illegally. By 2016 or 2017, Ashley had a $600 a day drug habit. Her earnings at Jamba Juice were insufficient to cover this amount. Ashley went to great lengths to access the drugs despite not having enough money. For example, she would steal them, borrow them, and exchange sex for them. Ashley had multiple sexual partners who fulfilled this purpose. Using Craigslist to find more sources of drugs, Ashley met a man named Henry Allen Stange. He lived in a house in Murrieta, California, and was in the process of a divorce. He had two children. Henry Stange was a strange individual. He was extremely active with ham radio and disrupted the community quite a bit with his controversial statements. Henry had been in a motorcycle collision, which left him disabled and in chronic pain. He took several medications, including oxycodone. Ashley obtained this drug from Henry by purchasing it and by exchanging sex. One could argue that this arrangement made them strange bedfellows. In 2017, Ashley met a man named Curtis Krueger, who was just a few years older than her. Curtis was in the Marines. He was stationed at the Marine Corps Air Ground Combat Center, which is also known as 29 Palms. He enlisted at the age of 17, earned his bachelor's degree, and then became an officer. Curtis was attracted to Ashley, and they became romantic partners. Ashley allowed Curtis to believe that they were in an exclusive relationship, and they even talked about getting married, but she was living a double life. She was still seeing Henry and maintaining a sexual relationship with him. Over time, Curtis started to grow concerned about Ashley's substance use behavior. Specifically, she was failing to regulate her intake of alcohol. On one occasion, after Ashley drank heavily, she disappeared. She was later found passed out in her vehicle in the desert. Curtis asked Ashley to share her location data from her cell phone. This way he could locate her if she became lost again. Ashley agreed and granted him access. During a family gathering in January 2018, Curtis looked at Ashley's phone and noticed that Henry had sent her an email. Curtis sent Henry an email telling him to leave Ashley alone or he would regret it. A few days later, Ashley turned off her phone, which prevented Curtis from locating her. This became a habit with Ashley, and it was frustrating to Curtis. He became suspicious and wondered if Ashley and Henry were having sex. On January 22, 2018, Curtis lost track of Ashley after she turned her phone off. When she reactivated her phone later, he saw that she was at a convenience store not far from the residence of Henry Stange. Curtis confronted her and learned about how she was exchanging sex for drugs. Ashley distorted the nature of her relationship with Henry to make Henry look as if he was taking advantage of her. This sent Curtis into a rage. Curtis and Ashley drove to Henry's house. As Ashley waited in the vehicle, Curtis entered the house and struck Henry in the head with a hammer. Curtis came back to the vehicle and explained to Ashley how he had done something bad. He eventually disposed of the hammer in the desert. It had actually been bent out of shape from slamming into Henry's head. The next day, Ashley went back to Henry's house because she was worried about him. It was clear that Henry had been hurt badly. He was bleeding from his ear and appeared to have a concussion. Henry never notified the police, and he did not know who attacked him. He never realized that it was Curtis. To Henry, the attack only hammered home this idea that the ham radio community was angry with him. He thought that one of them had come to drop the hammer on him. In order to protect himself, Henry installed surveillance cameras all around his house. Even though Curtis had confirmed his suspicions about Ashley's infidelity and had seriously injured her lover, he decided to remain in the relationship. His paranoia grew out of control, and he became obsessed with tracking Ashley's whereabouts. He forwarded emails from her account to his own, made her delete every male contact in her cell phone, and made a record of her movements. Ashley did not want to be tracked. She lied about where she was going, and she resumed the habit of turning off her phone. In April 2018, with his suspicions at an all-time high, Curtis decided it was time to get engaged to Ashley. In his way of thinking, this made sense. It would somehow magically solve their problems through some unknown and non-existent mechanism. Despite being newly engaged, Ashley wasn't ready to give up Henry. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On May 23, 2018, Henry invited Ashley to a party with him and his friend, oxycodone. The next day, May 24, Ashley drove to her mother's house, left her cell phone in a houseplant, and drove to Henry's house. Ashley and Henry used oxycodone and had sex. Curtis became concerned that Ashley was up to no good. He drove to the house of Ashley's mother and found Ashley's cell phone in the houseplant. At this point, he decided to go to Henry's house, thinking that she might be there. Curtis arrived at about 5:20 p.m. Ashley was in the bathroom of Henry's house, and Henry was in the garage communicating on his ham radio. He had the garage door open, as was his habit. Ashley heard a wrestling noise from the garage, followed by the sound of Henry screaming. At this point, Curtis entered the house and told Ashley that he had done something bad, and it was time for them to go. As Curtis and Ashley left through the garage door, Ashley saw Henry on the floor. At this point, he was seriously injured or dead. The couple drove away, but then returned later to clean up the crime scene. Ashley took Henry's oxycodone as Curtis removed the surveillance cameras. They loaded Henry into Curtis's pickup truck. The couple then drove to the desert and buried Henry's body in a shallow grave. On June 1, 2018, two hikers noticed vultures flying over an area of Joshua Tree National Park. They made a report the next day, and the authorities found Henry's body. He had sustained multiple blunt force injuries on his head. It didn't take long for the police to figure out what happened and who was responsible. They set up a wiretap and heard Ashley and Curtis talking about the crime. The couple was arrested in 2019. Ashley was offered a plea bargain and eventually pleaded guilty in connection with being an accessory after the fact. She was sentenced to 180 days in a substance use treatment facility. Curtis was charged with assault with a deadly weapon for the hammer attack on January 22 and murder for the attack on May 24. Ultimately, he was convicted. Curtis Krueger received 3 years in prison for the assault conviction and 15 years to life in prison for the second-degree murder conviction. The sentences are to run consecutively. Now moving to my analysis. Here are my thoughts on a few areas that stood out to me in this case. Item number one. At his trial, Curtis claimed that he overreacted when he attacked Henry with the hammer. As far as the murder charge, Curtis claimed that Henry attacked him with a knife, and he was just defending himself. Curtis managed to get the upper hand during the attack and only fled the scene because he was worried Henry was going to come after him. He didn't contact the police because Ashley convinced him not to. Curtis essentially blamed both Henry and Ashley and took no blame himself. At his sentencing, Curtis tried to argue that he was simply trying to defend Ashley from Henry's destructive power. The judge believed that Curtis was simply jealous and murdered a romantic rival in a rage. Item number two, investigators believed that Henry was still alive when he was loaded into the pickup truck at his house. Because of this, Ashley was initially charged with kidnapping, but the charge was dismissed under her deal with the state. Some people were furious over the generosity of this plea bargain. I think a good argument can be made that Ashley was more responsible than her conviction indicates. Ashley knew that Curtis was the one who attacked Henry with the hammer, but she did not warn Henry. She was aware that Henry thought of her as a girlfriend. He even introduced her this way to several people, including his ex-wife, his children, his neighbors, and fellow ham radio enthusiasts. Ashley admitted to manipulating Henry in order to get drugs. When Curtis fatally attacked Henry, Ashley did not call the police. Rather, she assisted in a haphazard cleanup effort. She even took Henry's medication. Maybe she figured he wouldn't be needing it anymore and would not want it to go to waste. After Ashley was sent to the substance use treatment facility, she was accused of violating a number of the rules, including fraternizing with male participants, trading clothing, failing to complete paperwork, leaving her drawer unlocked, and having contraband. She was sent to jail as a result. Ashley was offered the plea bargain of the century, yet could not even follow basic rules while receiving treatment. Item number three, when Ashley was having sex with both Curtis and Henry, she would make it seem as though Henry had committed serious offenses against her. She tried to play the victim. When Ashley was arrested, she implicated Curtis in the murder and supplied the police with the location of the hammer used in the January attack. Once again, Ashley was the victim. Both Curtis and Henry believed that they were in a romantic relationship with Ashley, but the truth is, Ashley had another lover who superseded both of them, namely drugs. It was all about Ashley chasing the next high. That's all that mattered to her. There is the sense that Ashley had no appreciation for consequences at all. It was just by pure luck that she ended up getting a lighter sentence. Item number four, both Henry and Curtis engaged in self-deception and misunderstood their relationship with Ashley. Henry was completely infatuated with Ashley. He talked about their love affair to anyone who would listen. He frequently mentioned her on his ham radio broadcasts. Henry told people that Ashley was everything he ever wanted in a woman. It was like Henry had become dependent on Ashley to keep his self-esteem elevated. Similarly, Curtis believed that Ashley was just about perfect for him. He had this system of matching himself to potential partners. He determined that Ashley was a 94.8% match. He said, quote, "She literally seems perfect," unquote. Before getting involved with Ashley, Curtis was warned that she was promiscuous and used substances. After the relationship started, he knew that she was cheating on him and using drugs, but he was unwilling to walk away. It was like Curtis was addicted to Ashley. No matter what she did, he couldn't give her up. Now moving to my final thoughts. This case is really about the power of addiction and how people can be dependent on many different things. Ashley was dependent on substances. She prioritized drugs above everything else. Henry was dependent on drugs, but also dependent on Ashley. His relationship with her made him feel fulfilled, like he had everything he needed. Curtis was dependent on Ashley and desired to dominate and control her. He viewed her as just about a perfect match, and he could not let go of her, no matter what. Everyone in the story was addicted to something they could not control. Two of them were addicted to someone who would ultimately destroy them. As is often the case, the individual with the strongest addiction to substances, and the weakest connection to people ended up victorious. Ashley was a proverbial train wreck who barely looked back at all the carnage that she caused in her life. One man who loved her is dead, another is in prison, and yet Ashley may not be done carving her trail of destruction.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.